Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Vicki, and Jay will meet with Lyon County Sheriff Brent White to discuss road safety during planting season. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us, and we hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
How are you doing, David?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Long time no see.
Yeah, that's right.
Been a minute.
It's been a minute. Just a little while. You too, Vicki. Right. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm really enjoying the sunshine
out there.
I mean, because it's been a whole lot of dreary, rainy days, so the sunshine is nice.
And hadn't gotten much done field work-wise. I think we're probably lagging behind pretty good. So hopefully our topic today, and we're going to talk a lot about moving equipment and doing some different things like that. So it ought to be interesting discussion today.
It is. Yeah, it's going to be fast and furious is what
right.
I think is going to
happen. I guarantee any time that Brent White is in the house, it's fast and furious, I promise you.
Lyon County Sheriff, Lyon County, Kentucky, for those of you listening outside of the state of Kentucky, or as we noticed earlier today, Brent, Russia. We had three listeners last week from somewhere in Russia.
Outstanding.
Lyon County is in western Kentucky. It's kind of at the north end of Lake Barkley, if you're familiar with that Kentucky Lake and Lake Barkley area. Brent's a sheriff in Lyon County. He's also a farmer. And for those of you that don't know him, he's also a retired Kentucky State Police officer. And those three accreditations with his law enforcement background and his farming background kind of is what qualifies him to be here on our show today and talk a little bit about road safety with farm equipment. So, Brent, glad you're with us this
Thanks
morning.
For having me. I'm also a proud graduate, University of Kentucky College of Ag, so I got to throw that in there.
I heard that. They was telling me that you had graduated.
We can't tell any
University
stories from that time period, but it was a great experience.
What happens there stays there,
yes,
right?
Yes, ma'am.
That's all a good thing. But, you know, it is planting season. We've got a lot of vehicles out on the road. We've got a lot of large, slow-moving vehicles that we don't see all the time, typically spring and fall. Planting and harvest is when we have a lot of farm vehicles on the road. And we just want to talk a little bit today and gather your thoughts about what producers can do to be as safe as possible and also what our motor vehicles can do to give these folks the breath that they need on the road.
Absolutely. It's a great topic, and with planting season underway here in western Kentucky, I know we woke up with a little frost this morning, but hopefully that's the last of all of that. But motorists and farmers alike should use a lot of caution when traveling on our rural roadways in west Kentucky. And our modern farm equipment, it's got a lot more safety features and better lighting than some of our older equipment. It's probably got a little bit better visibility, but then again, it's probably a larger piece of equipment or implement than it was when David and I were kids. And
there you go.
Because we're so old. But
y'all ain't neither one old.
some of this equipment is 2 to 3 times the height of a passenger vehicle, and so whether you're talking about taking up one lane or taking up multiple lanes of travel, when it outweighs an automobile by several hundred or several thousand pounds, when a collision does occur, the outcome may not be very good for the smaller passenger vehicle and can cause more severe injuries to motorists. So we do have some tips that I appreciate you inviting me here today to talk about, because we want to reduce the collisions that occur between farm equipment and our general motorist on the highway.
Absolutely.
I tell people all the time, I said, as farmers, we want to get to where we need to go as quick as possible, but we understand that motorists need to do the same thing, but we need to share the road and be able to have common courtesy for each other. And if I think when you start out like that, Brent, I think that's kind of where you start from, and then we go from there.
And I think, too, oh, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I think, too, education is key because, a lot of times there's a reason why a farmer isn't pulling off the road most of the time to let you by. Either they can see something that you can't see, or they're fixing to turn. There's a lot of things that go into that. And I think just making our motorists aware that sometimes they're not just, being stubborn, so to speak. That's what you hear a lot, that they won't let me pass. Well, it's because they're trying to keep themselves and the people behind them safe.
You're exactly right. I think most farmers and whatever implement that they're operating down the highway probably has a better visibility vantage point than any passenger vehicle on the roadway today. And so I think the two key words that I would say are exercising caution and patience when we're traveling this time of year and in the fall, as you talked about with planting season and harvest season. Those are the two times a year that, that you're going to encounter our farming community, our agricultural community on the roadways. And that's when we need to, just like we do at the beginning of school, when we remind everybody about school buses, it's the same way with our farmers. And we all, whether we're a motorist or a farmer, need to exercise that patience and caution during that time.
That's exactly right. And yeah, you know, patience isn't always everybody's best virtue, but it's something that I think we can all agree that we can work on a little bit better. And just
and some folks like to wave at you when you go by, you know. I don't know what that means, but yeah. I mean, I'm just
sometimes they it's wave a friendly
and
wave.
Yeah, and sometimes it's some other kind of wave.
They don't wave with the whole hand.
Right. Yeah. I don't understand what that is, but
just call it finger pointing and
I usually just wave back, you know.
And smile.
You know, what can you do? So
well, it is a time of the year, you know, right now when we have a lot of vehicles on the road. I think of harvest even being compounded above and beyond our spring planting season, because we've got grain hauling vehicles, semis usually, on the road. Sometimes it's tractors pulling grain carts on the road. If you live in country that might have a lot of non-truck driving populations, like our Amish population, things like that. But especially with the planting season, that's a time of the year when farmers are probably in their biggest rush. And right now they're in even more of a rush because the weather has delayed them by a good month. Talk a little bit about maybe the safety equipment that some of our farm vehicles should have. We know our newer vehicles, they come from the factory with everything. Some of them may not be as, you know, functional once they're on the year of road a year or two. But talk to us about traffic lights, safety placards, things like that should be a part of a vehicle.
Absolutely. First and foremost, our slow-moving emblems are a requirement in Kentucky for most farm equipment. If you're traveling below 35 miles per hour, generally farm equipment's going to be traveling 20, 25 miles per hour on our highways. But one of the things that a lot of people don't, you know, think about, you know, farmers, especially myself, is to making sure that slow-moving emblem is clear and visible. So a lot of times that sticker comes off and it's just the silver triangle of the metal there. We've probably all got piece of equipment that's got that on them, and we need to make sure that it is clearly visible, that the dirt is off of it. We need to make sure we replace the fading or missing slow-moving emblems. We need to also make sure, because we've had a wet winter, we need to make sure that the mud is off of turn signals and brakes, brake lamps, if we have those on the back of our tractors. We need to make sure we dust those off. Same way with any of our implements that we're pulling behind it. Turn signals, if we have them, are great because obviously it's going to notify somebody behind us of our intentions to turn right or left. And as we mentioned earlier, the left-hand turn is probably the most dangerous, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But escort vehicles, we do recommend in Kentucky. If we have over-dimensional equipment, ag-related equipment on our highway, we do recommend escort vehicles. That would, you know, that's a vehicle in the front and the back. Especially if we're moving oversized equipment or we're traveling long distances, making sure that they have some type of marking, or we're using an orange flag or a yellow or amber lighting on it, and that lighting works to identify the intended purpose. And not to pick on mail carriers, but we've all seen the rural letter carriers that has the yellow lights on the car that never work. And we get up behind them real quick, not realizing what's happening.
Right.
Our farmers need to make sure that equipment is operational before they decide to pull out in the field. Sometimes that's the last thing on our mind when we're trying to get seed in the ground. Easter was a little late this time, and we've row croppers have been burnt before by planting before Easter, so I think the Farmer's Almanac always kind of suggests a little later, so that frost this morning kind of tells us that. But those are some things.
Quick question about escort vehicles.
Yes.
On what are the differences on a two-lane road as compared to a four-lane road? How does that differ? What do we need to do differently?
Well, and I am not a commercial vehicle enforcement officer. I did previously impersonate somebody with the state police before I retired, but I'll say this: most most over-dimensional loads in Kentucky, you have to get a permit to go down the roadway, and that permit describes the type of escort vehicles to the T that you have to have, like a banner or placard in front and rear, certain kind of lights. But for agricultural equipment, we're generally exempt from a lot of that. And so it is our recommendation when you're transporting an over-dimensional load, whether it's a planting rig, you know, if we're working
tillage
equipment, yeah, that has dual wheels on it, mm-hmm, it's going to extend beyond 10 or 12 foot, that we have an escort vehicle in the front and rear. And if we have banners that say oversized load, that is something that I would consider putting on the front of the vehicle. I know some of our larger farmers around here are doing that now. Mm-hmm. You can put all the warning bells and whistles on everything, and some of the public is still not going to listen. But if you find yourself in a collision, the fact that you've done everything reasonable to try to avoid a collision, especially on a two-lane road, David, mm-hmm, I think that will put you in a better position from a legality and liability standpoint. Now, when it comes to four-lane roads, all the more reason to have a front and rear escort, because those vehicles are going to be traveling at a higher speed generally. And if a piece of farm equipment, so say that farm equipment can actually go 30 or 35 miles an hour, you're still at a 55 to 65 mile an hour speed, only going to have seconds on the closing distance, mm-hmm, when you're coming up behind that vehicle. And rear-end collisions and left-hand turn collisions are most dangerous for our farmers,
right,
and for the public. So just keep in mind, you cannot operate farm equipment on limited access highways, your interstates and parkways, unless you have special permits to do so. Generally, that's forbidden by federal and state laws, and you don't want to get in trouble with that. I know some farmers that risk it every year just because they've got a little place to go, and it would take them 20 miles to go round trip otherwise. But technically, that's illegal. And a lot of times when we see farm equipment out on our interstates, that results in some serious collisions.
I'll tell you a funny story. I just bought a drill, mm-hmm, up in Litchfield.
Right.
And part of the deal was that he was going to bring it to Hopkinsville. And anyway, he made it pretty good until he got off the interstate at Hopkinsville, and the state trooper, they had a conversation. I think there was some paper involved.
There might have been some
paper. Sure. But yeah, that's right. They're there for a reason. It's forbidden for a reason because of the high speeds, obviously, that people are traveling.
Just you might think that because it's a wider road, it would be safer to travel in that situation. It's really not. And if we can trailer or we can fold up those implements where we can to get those from point A to point B for long distances, it's always better. Every year we have that auction down in Graves County about this time of the year. That's the big two different weekends in the spring. We have the equipment auctions down there, and that seems to be a time when we see that more. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
that is correct.
And there just happens to be a state police post there.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
You know, you talked a little bit there about escort vehicles being part of these safety things. One of the things that I've noticed oftentimes with the use of a safety vehicle is they typically will have one front or back, not necessarily both. We were talking about this earlier, and I couldn't count the times that I became that rear escort vehicle for somebody just because I happened up along behind them. I'm in a position where I work with farmers, so I just threw on my caution lights and I became that rear vehicle. I was really without the legal lights that I needed to be a true escort vehicle. But a lot of times I see escort vehicles, especially in the spring, seems like more with our wheat harvest than any time, I will see escort vehicles behind the combine and they'll be pulling a header wagon with them. And that header wagon doesn't have lights on it. It doesn't have turn signals. And they've really negated themselves as an escort vehicle at that point.
That's at that point, what we call that is we've just created a buffer crash vehicle for the implement that's actually going down the road. And you're exactly right. And I've done that as well, and actually did that recently as well. Came up behind a tractor that was driving down the road, did have a escort vehicle in front. He was pulling a implement, and he did not have one to the rear, and so I just turned on my hazard lights and followed him until he got where he was going, which thankfully was the same route I was going. But if you can, it's best to have both. And it will really cause you a lot less problems if you have one. And from a, you know, David mentioned law enforcement. from a law enforcement perspective, you know, there's letter of the law. There's black and white. There's sometimes gray. The way the General Assembly writes our laws, whether it says may or shall, or if there's no conjunctive words in there that kind of, you know, take discretion out of our you know, options, then if the person that's potentially in the wrong is using all due regard for the safety of others on the highway and is being reasonable, many times that'll negate that paper that David was talking about. You know.
Yep. You mentioned, too, that equipment is bigger now than it used to be, and that is certainly true. But I think the other thing that we are seeing, that farmers are traveling much further distances than they used to. I mean, you know, back several years ago, you farmed pretty close to where your shop or home farm home base is, and you traveled a little bit, but you didn't really go out too far. Now, you know, these producers are farming in multiple counties, you know, and even in some cases, depending on where you're located, even maybe two states. Not, you know,
I've got a farmer that farms in McLean County and drives to Livingston County and has ground in Livingston County.
Yeah,
I have seen him. Yep. I have seen him.
And yes, I have one that's in Webster and then also farms, you know, in Todd County.
Yep.
And so I think you're traveling much further distances. And I think when you're traveling those long distances, that becomes really important with your escorts, because the longer you travel, the easier it is to get separated. I think, you
absolutely.
Know, you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you this, as we continue to travel those longer distances, if you're in an area that you haven't farmed previously, we ask these farmers to run these routes before they put this equipment on these routes. We had an incident with a railroad overpass not too long ago where a gentleman had not farmed this area before. Some ground came open. He rented that ground and then tried to get some equipment through there, and he couldn't get it there. And so that caused definitely a traffic issue for quite some time were trying to figure out how to get him around that area. So pre-route selection and running those routes to make sure you're in good shape, dimensional-wise, is often very smart as well.
Time of day.
That's what I was getting ready to say. It's traffic flow.
Yeah.
Time of day for two reasons. One is traffic flow. Just like you know, peak travel times is probably not the time. That may be when you get those one finger waves at you. And definitely the other issue there is dawn and dusk. Dusk is the worst time to be moving farm equipment, but it seems like it's a popular time for us. We're getting done at the end of the day, but it's the hardest time to see. And if we're not lit up, it's difficult. And while we're talking about lighting, I'll just say I'm bad about this. I'll leave my rear lights on sometimes on the back of a tractor when I'm going down the road from one barn to the next. And that is deceiving at night. When cars are coming up behind you, they think those are headlights, and it puts their depth perception off, and it can cause a rear-end collision. So it's just those kind of common sense things that we want people to think about.
The tractor that we use the most, and my son owns a farm down from me, and we do a lot of traveling with this particular tractor. We actually bought one of those, I don't know, lights to put in the back window, one of those that, well, you see them when they're bush hogging up and down the road.
Right.
That
like
really
a light bar type.
Yeah, kind of like a light bar that really flashes. And that really has helped, I think, a lot from people trying to, you know, you don't have to have your lights on. You can just leave that on, and that really helps a lot, I think.
Absolutely. Rear-end collisions, like I said, and left-hand turn collisions are the ones that we see from a law enforcement perspective the entire time I was a trooper as well as now as a sheriff. It's the same. And the two major causes of a lot of these collisions are most of the time in-cab distraction and maybe driving too fast for the conditions. So those are two that will be a contributing factor to a lot of farm-related accidents on the highway.
Absolutely.
And the thing about it is, and you alluded to it earlier, the passenger vehicle usually takes the brunt of that collision. I mean, it really does. I mean, most of the farm equipment is large enough now that they can sustain a pretty good hit, but the passenger cars and vehicles and trucks and things are not like that.
It's, and it's basic physics.
That's exactly right.
Mass versus mass.
Right. Exactly right.
I have seen in Christian County when I worked there, I can think right offhand of two passenger vehicle versus tractor accidents to where the tractor did actually sustain a lot of damage, but the farmer on the tractor walked away and the person in the passenger vehicle did not.
Yep.
One of those I can think of was an actual fatality. One of them was not, but could have very easily been. Mm-hmm. And that's just, like I say, it's basic physics. It's mass versus mass. And, I've got a son, he's in college now, but when he was 16 years old and started driving, I didn't put him in the little Honda that I was driving every day. I bought him a half-ton four-wheel drive truck because I wanted him
safe.
A little bit of a cage around him, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely. While we're talking about equipment, too, I want to add that something farmers can do to increase their collisions with passenger vehicles more than anything is they can make sure their mirrors are clean and make sure that they actually have mirrors. You know, when I was growing up, we didn't have any mirrors on our tractors because they were on the outside, and my granddad liked to get right up underneath the trees when we bush hogged, you know. So we tore them off as quick as we got them. That's right. But if we have mirrors, and if we've had mirrors that have broken off, and we replace those, and I know a lot of farmers are worried about making sure these seed drills are working and making sure they can get all their supplies, but that is something that's really important. And when we're on the highway, whether it's dawn, dusk, or the middle of the day, we need to turn on our headlamps. Our headlamps are great protection if we have them on our tractors for warning motorists, hey, that doesn't look right. Because as humans, we get inoculated into the spacing of headlights on passenger vehicles. When you see something that may be on a tractor, you know that's a little bit different, especially if it's higher off the ground, and it'll cause attention to be paid to that particular vehicle you're meeting. And so I really encourage anybody that's out on, not only use your flashers if you have them, but turn those headlights on as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say too, I mean, from a farmer side, you know, of course we work with a lot of farmers, and so we just kind of look at their side sometimes too, but one thing that I have noticed is that they are really going to try everything they can do to keep from hitting a passenger vehicle.
Oh,
I mean, they will take a ditch themselves or take a pole out or you know, take somebody's mailbox out or whatever the case may be, from something minor to something that could be, like you're talking about, be a major accident if they can at all. I do think that farmers will just typically do that because they don't want to cause any injury to someone else. And I do want to, you know, give a little shout out to farmers on that, because I think the vast majority will do that, and you fellas can probably attest to the same thing.
Back to what I was talking about a minute ago with basic physics, most of them understand the position they hold on the road when they're the biggest, slowest, heaviest moving vehicle. A lot of our people in passenger vehicles don't. And that's not just to point fingers at our passenger vehicles. One of the things that I feel like, and I feel like farmers fall into this category as well, to play the devil's advocate on the other side, Vicki, and not necessarily to point fingers, but I feel like our technology and our farm equipment nowadays has made this equipment so much easier to drive and so much easier to use in the field that farmers, you mentioned earlier, in-cab distractions. One of those distractions is a phone, because a lot of them are looking at those phones now because it's so much easier to operate this equipment. Our power steering is one of the biggest things that I think about, different now from farm equipment 30 years ago. It makes it so much easier to operate that they relax.
Absolutely.
They get a little more comfortable.
Yeah, and you can relax in the field sometimes and let that GPS equipment take you where you need to go, but when it comes to being on that roadway, whether you're a motorist or a farmer, either one,
put that phone down
until you get where you're going.
Yeah. And you know, and I've been a part of convoys and different things and moving large equipment and stuff that as you know, and we had the proper flaggers and things, and people would just blow by you like you were, you know, sitting still. And then when they meet, you know, when you meet a tractor in a 35, 40-foot disc with a color packer behind it, they just can't take the ditch very good, and it'll tear up lots of stuff. So as motorists, we need to be aware of that, regardless of whether you know anything about agriculture industry or not. And hopefully this this is one of the ways we can educate folks.
Well, one of the most dangerous situations I've seen through the years, and I couldn't count how many times I've seen it, motor vehicle, passenger vehicle coming down the road, and they come up on that rear escort vehicle, and they're in a hurry, and they pass that escort vehicle, maybe even pass the combine or whatever the piece of equipment is, and then they're caught in between that front escort vehicle and the combine. And you have really taken away that combine's ability to stop once you, you took his stopping distance away from him, basically.
And those don't stop on a dime.
They don't.
The way.
They don't.
And neither does a loaded semi.
That's a great segue. We talked a lot about for the farmers, some spring safety tips. From the motor's perspective, just what we were talking about, we want them to be aware. We want them to watch for this slow-moving farm equipment. We want them to remember just what you alluded to. This equipment doesn't behave like cars and trucks and passenger vehicles when it comes to speed, when it comes to turning, when it comes to braking. And so, you know, if they're aware and are able to be aware of their closing distance, so to speak, between how fast they're going and what they're coming upon, that they're overtaking another vehicle, such as an escort vehicle or a piece of farm equipment, that will prevent a lot of accidents in and of itself. Reducing their speed, especially when they get into agricultural areas that they, you know, there's an area in my county that this time of the year, you just know you're going to meet farm equipment quite a lot. And so just be cognizant of that and be ready to reduce your speed, be watching for that equipment entering and leaving the roadway. And then if you do get up behind an escort vehicle or a piece of equipment, you know, give a safe distance. If you want to turn your hazard lights on, there's nothing illegal about that, because you're warning the motorist to your rear that, you know, that there's something ahead that you need to proceed with caution. And then if you do decide to pass, only pass where it's safe and legal to do so, where you have good visibility, and just make sure that that farmer is not about to turn left, because that sometimes are the worst accidents, and it really puts us in a quandary a lot of times from a legal perspective between who has the right of way and when. And many times if somebody goes out to pass and they're in a legal passing zone, then they've established right of way by law. And so that farmer that's turning left has to make sure he looks back, not just ahead, to make sure he's not going to be turning into someone. But above all, just be patient, especially during this heavy ag-related time of the year for us.
Yeah, right. I think patience are probably as good of a piece of advice as we could possibly give. I mean, I don't have very many, but I do when we're moving equipment. I mean,
you don't have any. Let's just say that like it is. Yeah. You're out. You're out of them.
And I'll say too, and I think we may have touched on it briefly, but if you are a motorist and you're traveling and you meet somebody, sometimes just take a minute to just look at your surroundings too, because farmers do appreciate when you're pulling off the road and really trying to help them where they can, when you're meeting them. Not in a passing situation, but meeting them, they do appreciate and see that you're trying to help them and can get off. But there are some places that you may be getting off on the side of the road and really doing everything right, except if you look right to your left, there may be you may be right across from a mailbox or a road sign that is causing that large equipment not to be able to pass, because they're going to have to ease over in that other lane to be able to get around it without the mailbox or taking a roadside sign down. And so just, you know, when you're pulling over, that's very appreciative. But, you know, if you can just kind of look and just see what's right across from you, because that will help too, because they do appreciate when you're doing that. But sometimes they can't move until you move at that point.
That's a great tip.
Seen passenger vehicles do that, stop just because it's a convenient place to stop. And more times than not, the best thing for them to do may be to pull off in a driveway if there's one available, right. Because then you're giving them the full breadth of the road. And nobody has time to do that, but if you stop and take the time to do that, you might get to where you're going a little bit quicker because you prevented an accident.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing is that our infrastructure of our roads, it's not always easy to pull off the road for our farmers. There are places that the ditches are too deep, and if you were to try to pull off at a certain spot, you may turn over the piece of equipment. You think you're late now. You turn a piece of equipment over, and Brent can testify, I'm sure, to how much longer that's going to be before you get to where you're going. So, you know, just don't pull across from a mailbox or a road sign and pull in the driveway or something like that. Because if you're following somebody, realize that that person may not necessarily be able to get off every time there's four or five cars behind them because it's not safe. And because of that, they don't want to tear the equipment up and those type. I mean, combines are $250,000, and that's probably worth a little more than your $50,000 car.
Without a header.
Without the header attached. Sure. So, we need to think about those kind of things, too.
And they may be fixing to turn left.
That's right.
And you don't know that yet, but that may be another reason because they know they're fixing to make a left-hand turn.
And just because you see them pulling off to the right, don't just assume they're turning right. They're probably, especially if they've got a disc and a cultipacker behind it or something, they're needing to swing wide in order to make that turn. And so, again, patience is the best virtue there with respect to it's probably not going to be that much difference in the amount of time that you're behind them and the time it takes you to get to your destination. It may seem like it, but like David said, you would rather get there slowly than not be able to get there at all because of a wreck.
You know, David, you talked about a passenger vehicle being in behind a combine. Keep in mind with the overall size, Brent, you talked earlier about how much bigger some of these pieces of equipment are of cars. If you get very close up in behind that vehicle, they might not even know you're there because of the width of their mirrors. They're looking behind you if you're very close. So giving them plenty of space to stop is a benefit for them, but it could be a benefit for yourself as well if they don't know you're there.
Yeah. And on the other side of that deal, Brent, like pulling people that pull, like they see a grain truck coming and they pull out in front of them, they're trying to get ahead of them. You know, we see that all the time.
A lot of times, absolutely.
And a loaded grain truck, and I'm not sure the statistics on and how long it takes somebody to stop if they're going 50 miles an hour, but it's not on a dime.
No, I can give you an example. So if a car's traveling at 55 miles an hour and a vehicle pulls out ahead of them and they're only going 15 miles per hour, it takes quite a bit, probably takes about 5 seconds or less for that closing gap to occur. And many times this farm equipment and some of these bigger trucks, especially a truck that's gross vehicle weight rating over 26,000 pounds or more, maybe one that's 88,000 pounds or more, or 80,000 pounds or more, is certainly one that it may take almost the length of a football field to really come to a complete stop without hammering on the brakes. So certainly a good analogy there for people to understand what it takes to stop some of these pieces of equipment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can stand on the brakes on a semi all you want to, but every bit of that corn or beans or wheat behind you is going to push you right on.
Goes back to physics.
That's
again.
That physics thing. That's exactly what I was thinking.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. I mentioned to them, we were discussing this a little bit before you got here, and just yesterday I was coming down the road and I saw a semi approaching the little intersection that I was coming to, and I could just tell he wasn't going to stop. There was no way he was going to stop. And knowing that area and that little Y in the road, he had no intentions of stopping. Mm-hmm. So I'm fully back up the hill, and I start backing off. And when he hit that curve and slung that truck around, I knew it was loaded just by the note that he had his tarp over his bin, you know.
Right.
But he turned around and made that turn, and by the time he saw me, he was getting up on it. I knew he was getting on his brakes. If I'd have been going, it'd have been too late. But because I saw him coming, I was able to give him that wide berth to come on and come into the road.
And the reason you saw him coming is you didn't have in-cab distraction. You probably had your phone down, or at least not where you were messing with it at that time. Yeah. And so that's a win.
David and I were talking with Vicky, too, about this. When you've been in the cab of that equipment going down the road, you pay attention to that whether you're in a tractor or not.
Sure.
I've spent a lot more time on the road pulling trucks and trailers, so that's what I watch for. I watch for trucks and trailers. That's one of the things I try to give them their space, if you will, whether it's at a fuel service island, giving them the outside, because I know that's where the diesel tanks are, or whatever. So the people that have not had the experience in this type of vehicle don't automatically know. You just don't know those things unless you've done them yourself.
And you know, just we were talking about the spring and the fall of the year. Our farmers are more efficient today than they've ever been.
Absolutely.
That's
they
right.
They cover hundreds of thousands of acres. You know, I know my sharecropper is probably approaching 30,000 acres now that they're planting. And they do that in a very short window of time. And so kudos to them. But at the same time, it's still a short window. And the fact that they can do all that and be done and the fact that we don't see that over long periods of time as motorists, it is somewhat shocking when you have inexperienced motorists or distracted motorists that comes upon this equipment and they haven't been expecting it. They're traveling that same route every day and they're not expecting it, and it's been 6 months since anything like that's been on that roadway before. And so certainly, I think this is a good reminder to let people know that they need to watch.
You know, and if we were out there every day, it'd be a different ball game. But it is just a short period of time in the spring, and it's a relatively short period of time in the fall, you know, a month and a half or so. So, I would agree with that for sure.
And it just takes the farmer and the non-farmer, the motorist, to just work together.
Sure.
Both of them be aware of their surroundings. Both of them be aware of – respect the other one, really. Just respect the other one.
Right.
And work together, and as you said, share the road. You know, it's very doable. It's just a matter of you know, taking the time to, like you said, patience.
Common sense really comes into play. I know we're pretty short on that these days in our society. But
I wouldn't have a job if we weren't, but yes, that's true. Yes, yes.
But, you know, look, just a little bit of common sense goes a long way. And it's kind of like Jay was talking. He saw the guy coming, and he had enough sense to know that I probably should back off and just let him kind of do his thing and kind of ease into this deal and not run up on him.
Right.
And then there you'd have been. You know, it'd have been worse than what it was.
I'll throw this out there, too. Parents, if you've got young drivers, beginning drivers, kids that are just getting their license, take the time to talk about all this stuff with them. You know, talk about where to pull off, where not to pull off. You know, all of that information, because they don't know. They're inexperienced drivers coming up on a situation they've never been upon in. Just take the time to talk to those young drivers about that and what to expect in these next few weeks.
I've got a 15-year-old daughter. She's going to be driving probably in a year or less, which will cause the rest of my hair to fall out as it's already started.
It won't take much.
That's true. That's true, David. Thanks for pointing that out. But
I didn't say a word.
we were driving recently and on a trip, and we were coming through Tennessee, and when a guy wears blue in an orange country, you try to get through there as quick as you can. But we came upon an obstacle, I'll say, in the roadway, and I could see traffic backing up, and we were going a pretty good clip on a four lane, but both lanes were stopping, and I hit my flashers, my hazard lights on my car. To warn the drivers behind me. My daughter, 15 years old, asked that question, why are you doing that, Dad? What is that button? She didn't even know. Yeah. And so I think it is, what you said, very important to take this information, educate your kids when you're out and about, because they'll soak it up. But if you don't give them any kind of guidance or direction, they'll panic. They'll do something that is probably an error and cause a collision. And I can promise you this, that father doesn't want me to call them to say their daughter's been involved in a wreck. That farmer doesn't want to have been involved in a wreck, because now he's probably got a piece of equipment that's out of commission for a while. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, everybody is using the same repairman to keep the equipment going in the fields for spring planting season. They don't have time to repair as much either. And so,
and you can't get the parts these days.
You can't get the parts these days, and insurance will always go up.
Reminds me of that old quote that I heard years ago, that experience is that thing that you get right after you needed it.
Exactly right. Boy, that's been the story of my life.
Yeah.
But when I think about when I think about young drivers, though, I mean that's that's every part of their driving journey. You know, is everything is new that first time.
You're exactly right.
So
You know, and I wish that when kids were going through, if they had a driver's ed class or something, that they would have a section about farm agriculture equipment or something. Boy, that would be so handy, especially in our rural areas that we have so much agriculture equipment to talk about. Don't pull out in front of a semi, especially a loaded semi, because they're going to just barrel right through. There's nothing they can
do. Nothing they can do.
Well, that's, it just gives me the idea for an educational component that, all of us could do. We all have a youth component that we work with some, and most all of our schools here in, the rural part of the state that we live in have that tractor day where everybody drives a tractor to school, you know, the big kids that have them. That might be the day to where we have some PSAs available on the radio to the rest of that school population and work with them that day a little bit about driving in and around large equipment. I don't know. That might be the good time for it.
Absolutely.
We hardly do this show, Brent, what something doesn't give us an idea either for another show or something to work on.
That's a good thing.
So, you know, one of the things we like to do towards the end of this show is we have a timely tip, and it's something that we feel like is pertinent to the point that that show is going to be airing, and we felt like a good timely tip for this week for the discussion we're having is to have functional warning lights on your equipment and safety placards in place on all your slow-moving vehicles and equipment. I'm going to go on and throw flaggers or escort vehicles on there, too, to make sure that you're using them where it's pertinent. And I'll add, too, something that Brent brought up. Make sure those placards are clean and visible. Make sure that those lights are dusted off and easy to see. I can think of a lot of times where I've run up on the back of a red combine and that safety placard didn't hardly stand out at all because of the dust. The whole thing was dusty and you just couldn't see it.
Don't just do it because I said so. It's technically the law in Kentucky.
Absolutely.
So if we can do that, we'll definitely, if something does happen from a liability standpoint, it's one less thing for an insurance company to argue about, one less thing for a police officer to have to issue a citation about.
It's due diligence when you have done your part. We can't do everything in the world to avoid an accident, but when you have done all that you're supposed to do, it certainly helps you in that point whenever you're trying to work things out. So.
Absolutely. You always want to be on the best position you can be on that field, just like UK football, right?
That's right.
And Jay, real quick. Farmers, if you've got new folks helping you, that's going to be helping you move and be that flagger, train them on how to flag, how to be that escort vehicle, how far ahead they need to be, where they need to be. I mean, just make sure that you train up your folks, too, to make sure that they know what's expected of them and what they need to do.
I think that's an excellent point, Vicki. We have farmers who bring in part-time seasonal help every year, and a lot of times that's what they're doing is just driving a vehicle from point A to point B. Getting them educated on that subject is very, very important.
We had H-2A workers that would help us, and, you know, it would be a very short conversation, but it would be a conversation about, hey, you need to stay, you know, so many car lengths in front. Most of the time we let them follow because that was the easiest thing for them to do and to understand. But, you know, either way, whoever you've got, they need to know what's going on.
One thing I will say that we didn't talk about on escort vehicles that I think is important to note here is we've seen this with mobile home movers throughout Western Kentucky and rural areas where the initial front flagger will get over in the other lane and try to potentially stop traffic. That can cause a problem. it definitely, just because you're flagging doesn't absolve you of the rules of the road, and so you still have to yield the right of way to other vehicles. Now, getting their attention, using a flag to encroach upon their lane to slow them down, all of that is okay, but when you head on, go into the opposite lane, you know, to try to slow or stop a car you think is going too fast, may not be the best course of action.
Right. Absolutely.
Good point. Very good point to make.
Is that common sense?
It should be.
I'm just throwing that out there.
It's all in who you pick to be the lead vehicle, you know.
it's good sense, even if it's not that common.
That's
anymore.
Right. That's
so
right.
Good
That's
point. Right. Good place to wrap things up. So, Brent, we want to certainly thank you for being a part of us this week and helping us with this show. We want to thank our hosts for this week's information and our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show and will make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. Until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.